Harder Knocks. You are now listening to Harder Knocks.
Kyle, I wasn't sure if we were going to do it. You and me, we were two men on the bubble, and the 53-man roster cuts came, and look at that. We made it. We're still here.
Yeah, man, this is my fourth season, and for 3 years now, I've been waiting for the call, wondering if it'll be my last. So I'm happy to be here for another year.
Absolutely, and this is the last episode, I guess I should say, of Harder Knocks, training camp with Hard Knocks, training camp with the Oakland Raiders. I'm Matt Wachs.
And I'm Kyle Martin, and we've got a special guest for you this episode, right? Don't we, Matt?
Absolutely. We have an arguable MVP of Hard Knocks, a guy who is a leader, a guy who is a coach, a guy who is a mentor, and I think after that interview, a guy who is a friend.
Just wanted what's best for his guys.
Exactly, and that is defensive line coach Brenson Buckner, who will join us a little later on in the program. It sure was a pretty interesting, kind of depressing, very unique episode of Hard Knocks, and as you were saying before we got started, at least we don't have to wake up at 5 a.m.
We all know that Coach Gruden is notorious for waking up early, right? And commuting with Paul Gunther is something that we've heard a little bit about before, but his assistant Jeff was there to pick him up at 4:48 a.m.
That
right?
is early.
And
what
I thought
do you think
it was
his alarm clock is?
Well, see, this is the thing, is that Coach Gruden even says, you guys are 12 minutes early. I thought you were supposed to be here at 5. So I think it's funny that for someone who's notorious for waking up way before everybody else was complaining that they are 12 minutes early.
He was probably getting a workout in or something.
He might have been. What do you think Coach Gruden's workout regimen is?
Oh, God. I can't even deign to guess.
Whatever Deuce puts him through?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, his bodybuilding son who's sure just stacked.
Yeah, I'm sure he can throw some plates around, though.
What'd you think of that car ride?
Well, a couple things. First of all, I think it's cool that they commute together. I can't imagine what a morning commute with Gruden would be like. That actually is a great story idea. We should send someone from Raiders.com to go on a morning commute with Gruden.
I think I know a guy who writes stuff like that, so I could put in a good word with him. We'll see if he's able to do it or not. 4:48 is a little bit early for his standards, but we'll see if we can make it happen.
Absolutely. And then I think it's kind of cool, a lot of Ozzy's Boneyard and a lot of Hair Nation on the Sirius XM.
Dude, that, I love old school rock or like
sure.
Metallica stuff too.
Heavy metal.
I don't listen to it a lot on my own, but I can't imagine. Like when I come to work every day, I seldom listen to the radio because I'm not a morning person. So I use that as an opportunity to just silence. I need to get my mind right.
You ride in silence not to
all
work?
Not all the time. But sometimes the radio just annoys me. You know, I don't want to listen to the stupid skits on whatever radio station I'm listening to. I just don't want to do it, okay? And the thought of listening to Metallica or Hair Nation at 4:48 in the morning, no way. Absolutely not. And then when Gruden smacks the dash, he goes, this is my jam! And he cranks it all the way up, no. That might have been editing. They might have just raised the volume of the song in Hard Knocks.
Sure.
But no way, dude.
I also like the little touch where they keep a piece of paper over the Sirius XM dashboard so that you can't see the song, so that Gruden and Gunther and his assistant Jeff can guess the name of the song that's playing. I think that's a nice touch. Honestly, this is about Antonio Brown because yet again, we got multiple slow-mo workout montages of Antonio Brown in this episode.
I feel like I paused this episode a lot more than I did with the other ones, watching it through. When they do the overhead shot of his house after practice, right? Mm-hmm. When he goes through and he does all his, he just roasts people. His one-handed catch is impressive. But when they get to his house, did you notice the amount of cars in the man's driveway?
I did, and I couldn't tell if they were all part of his like coterie, like his people, or if that was just because it was a cul-de-sac, a lot of his neighbors all kind of had to park in the same spot. But there were a lot of wheels.
And there were a lot of them were parked on the grass.
Yeah.
Just driven up into his driveway on his yard. It was like, wow. And the man's entourage is, we know about it. It's storied, but.
Part of that entourage include his undeniably adorable children.
They are. They are incredibly cute, but.
Running around stealing Scully caps.
Yeah. I couldn't tell if he like legit wanted his beanie back or not.
I was like, couldn't tell either.
Is this man playing or he's just giving his kid a hard time? But what an interesting moment that is, because you see a little bit in the time and effort that he takes to take care of his body. And you hear about LeBron spending X amount of money on keeping his body right. Odell has done a lot of stuff to train in the offseason, keep his health in peak physical form. But, man, would you do that? I don't feel like you'd be an acupuncture guy.
I mean, when your body's your career and your livelihood, I feel like you kind of have to invest a certain amount in it. I think athletes today are taking better care of themselves than athletes ever have historically. Mm-hmm. And there's something kind of exciting about trying new recovery methods that are on the bleeding edge of health and technology. Like, I don't know if I would go so far as to create my own system like Tom Brady, but it sure would be cool to, like, you know, get pitched on some new crazy workout blood spinning technique in Germany or something. You know, I think there's something to that.
Sure. But you got to wonder at one point, are people just doing this? Because I feel like Tom Brady is the perfect example. Didn't he say it's some ridiculous hot take where it's like, you drink too much water, it's bad for you, or avocados give you superhuman strength? These are all just random things I'm thinking of. But I know there's one thing with Tom Brady and his health regimen that's like, I don't know if you're right about that.
Yeah, I can't pretend I'm versed in the TB12 system, nor will we endorse it on this program.
No, the only system I want to be a part of is the Kobe system.
Yes. Yes, the Kobe system.
While we got to see a little bit about AB's workout, his helmet. They talked about his helmet. And the jokes that were made about his helmet were fantastic, in my opinion. I think it's a cool helmet, for sure. But it gets called a Camaro at one point. He gets told that he looks like a Power Ranger. I thought it was all amazing.
Yeah, a fridge. I think someone called it a fridge.
Yeah, a mini fridge.
I think it's cool. I think the back, the little swoop, looks like almost like a spoiler on like a race car.
Yeah, I would agree. The Camaro, I think they go hand in hand. Yeah, very cool stuff. And it's a blessing that the man has finally settled on a helmet that he likes.
He's got to protect his head and neck.
Yeah, the lid is everything. Walks, as you said previously, as we transition out of the AB segment, Coach Gruden decides to give the running backs a little college trivia. They're in a film session. They're watching Danny Woodhead lay some blocks. They're watching Le'Veon Bell lay some blocks. And Coach Gruden asks the guys, where did Danny Woodhead go to college? And truthfully, I didn't know until he asked them, and no one knows.
Right.
Because I'm not sure I've even heard of Shadron State.
No, I haven't either.
Can't imagine it's a big school.
I don't think so. I had more of an issue with Gruden's coaching, not style, his teaching style. The call and response, the Le'Veon who, Bell, it drives me crazy. I find it kind of annoying if I was sitting. I'm sure he does it to keep everyone on their toes, to keep everyone engaged. But everyone knows Le'Veon Bell's last name. Like, I would like to hear more about the methodology that goes into all that rather than, or maybe it's just one of his tics. Maybe it's just something that he does.
I wonder, because I agree with you. He does that for a lot of things. But I wonder specifically with the Bell thing, after he asks, he uses Bell to be
right.
He rung his bell.
Right.
I don't know if that was part of his coaching joke.
Oh, I'm sure it was. I'm sure he was quite pleased with that when he came up with it.
But I have a couple questions for you about our players on our roster.
Okay. Let's do it, man.
So I'm going to ask you about four players and where they went to college. These are the most obscure colleges.
Oh, boy.
One of them you'll probably know pretty well.
Okay.
So we'll lead with him.
Okay.
Okay, get your confidence up.
All right.
Where did Antonio Brown go to college?
He went to Central Michigan University.
Correct.
The Chippewas, I believe.
Where did Brandon Parker go to college?
Brandon Parker went to North Carolina A&T.
Two for two.
But I don't know the mascot. The Aggies, maybe? A lot of those A&T schools are Aggies.
You could have gotten away with that point because I wasn't going to ask you the mascot. But the fact that you know that is rather impressive.
Is it the Aggies?
I can't confirm that. I can't confirm that.
Okay.
Third, I'm going to save the best for last.
Okay.
Third, Eric Harris.
Oh, man. Where did Eric Harris go? Eric Harris went to, it's in Pennsylvania.
Correct.
And it's named after a place that isn't in Pennsylvania. It's like a Miami of Ohio situation. I think he went to California, Pennsylvania.
Ding, ding, ding.
All right.
We got three for three. Okay. All right. You're doing
I'm feeling
great.
Good.
We'll give you three.
I have no idea the mascot for California, Pennsylvania.
Oh, I don't either. I couldn't tell you. this last one.
The last one, the toughest one, the money round. This is the bonus.
I don't know what I'll do as a prize, but I promise you there will be one.
Okay, okay.
Denzel Good.
Oh, man. Where did Denzel Good go to school? I am going to say that he went to... I don't have any clue. I don't even have a region. Could you give me a region?
I honestly, I know very little about the school other than the name. But I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
The first word is a planet.
I'm going to assume it's not a geographical name. It's not like Western Kentucky.
No.
You know what I mean?
No, it is not.
Okay. the first name is a planet. That actually confuses me more than anything. Okay, I'm gonna guess Jupiter State.
No, it is not, but I like the guess. It is Mars Hill.
Mars Hill is the name of his college?
Denzel Good went to Mars Hill.
Where is Mars Hill? Can we look up Mars Hill?
Never heard of it. But I'm impressed. You did good. I mean, we'll give you 3.5 out of 4.
Wow. Mars Hill University is in Mars Hill, North Carolina. It is a liberal arts college near Asheville in NC. The more you know. Division II. How about that? That was fun, Kyle.
Good. I'm glad. I was hoping you'd enjoy that as a big trivia guy.
Yeah, that was fun. Brandon Marshall, on the other hand, he's a guy I do know. He went to UCF, and he had a bit of a deep dive on him this episode. Small arc, and obviously the ending isn't what he or fans of his hoped.
Honestly, man, his arc bummed me out the most because I thought we both saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood together. You know, I don't want to spoil anything for anybody, but essentially there's a scene where I'm going down a wrong hole that's irrelevant to anything we're discussing. Anyway.
You threw me with that.
Yeah, the point, you'll understand when I say it. Okay. I just don't want to be the guy who spoils something for the fans who haven't seen it or care to see it. Brandon Marshall's arc upsets me because he, out of everyone, is the oldest, right? He's had the most time in the league, and he's coming to terms with the fact that someone is telling him no about whether or not he can continue to play football. And coming to grips with a craft that you've honed and perfected all of your life to know that it's coming to an end. That is a tough pill to swallow. And I don't know, I can't imagine I would take it much better than he did. He handled it like a pro.
I think the toughest part for me is he sort of saw it coming. He's a very self-aware guy, you know, and you see a shot of him in camp where he wonders aloud whether the perception of him is already solidified, that he's not a guy who can stay on the field healthy. And he feels like he's ready to go now, but it's just clear that he's lost the time that he needs to stay up to speed in Coach Gunther's offense. And it's tough because this is a guy who's a Las Vegas native who's looking forward to play for the Las Vegas Raiders. You know, he's a former Bronco. He had week one circled on his calendar for months. And for him to come this close to that and not have it happen is, like you said, really, really hard to watch.
Yeah, it's devastating, man. And, I mean, even while he has the most time in the league and this is a unique experience for him, no matter who got cut, whether it was, you know, Keelan Doss, who we'll get to, Jason Kabinda, all those guys, Luke Wilson, it's a tough process, man. And Mike Mayock on his conference call Saturday afternoon was just talking about how he had tears in his eyes for some of the people that he talked to, because no matter what, it's not an easy decision that you have to make, but it's one that you have to do because it's a business. And I feel like a lot of people probably lose track of or forget that it's a business. I don't know. It's hard for it to not be personal.
And Marshall, as Abram points out, ran with the ones all throughout camp. Like, he was the guy. He was first team defense. So I think that especially adds a wrinkle of surprise and disappointment, frankly.
Yeah. What an interesting setting that was for Abram.
Yeah, let's
and
talk
Cleo
about that for
Pearl.
A second. Very, it seemed very staged, right?
Yes, one, very staged. Two, it was just bad fishing location. Like, these men, they're from the South. They understand. I don't know. Abram clearly likes horses. Like, I imagine he does other
stuff
outdoors. Yeah. He should probably know I'm sure, like we said, it's probably staged. They were forced to go there right off the Alameda
or asked
bridge.
To go there. Yeah. So explain a little bit for viewers who aren't familiar with Alameda or this location, where they were fishing and why that was such a surprising and confusing location for them to be.
So Alameda, it's obviously an island for the people who aren't in the Bay Area.
Roughly between it's
just off the coast of Oakland.
Right.
It's right
in between
door.
Oakland and San Francisco, off the coast of Oakland.
And there's a couple different bridges that you can use to get on the island, but the island is broken up into two sections, and there's a bridge that connects them, and so a channel runs through it, right, stemming from the bay. And this channel, the tide is always really low. You can see the mud when you're driving in the morning. And I can't imagine that, one, they caught very many fishing there, and two, the amount of fish, if they did catch any, probably had three eyes, an extra fin. It probably wasn't the best looking fish you've ever seen. Had three lips for some reason. Did you see, there's a story recently about a lady who was fishing, I think on the East Coast with her husband, and there was a fish that had two mouths.
Oh,
I imagine that this would be the similar situation.
That's terrifying.
Yeah,
that's
gnarly.
Thalassophobia stuff. I don't want to deal with any of that.
You just used some big words that went right over my head.
Like, it's like the fear of the deep, of, you know, like the fear that there's unspeakable monsters that are below the depths that any lake can reach, like huge sea monsters.
Yeah, some Godzilla type of stuff.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, it was a weird fishing location, but clearly a good little talking point for them to discuss the severity.
And now Abram has monetized his salmon issue.
This bothers you, doesn't it?
It does, because I'm a huge fan of Jonathan Abram. I have a nickname for him, the cleat-seeking missile, that I'm trying to get to catch on. I'm unveiling it right now on this podcast. I want it to become a big thing, but I am so sick and over the salmon-salmon thing, and I just wish it would go away.
It's not exactly like a good look for you either, you know? I wouldn't want to be known as the guy who couldn't tell whether or not salmon was pronounced salmon or salmon.
Well, and at this point, he knows
it's a
the
joke.
Proper way to yeah. pronounce it. So the fact that he's kind of clinging to the salmon thing is a little bit disingenuous, but hey, whatever sells t-shirts, you know what I mean?
Yeah, whatever gets his brand out there, right? It's all about the brand.
Should we start selling Harder Knocks merchandise?
I feel like we missed our opportunity a while ago.
That's a great point, actually.
Just two cartoon faces, me and you.
Yep. Throw it on some koozies.
Yeah, make stickers.
Yeah, absolutely. And you touched on this earlier, Kyle, but Cabinda, Wilson, Doss, Marshall, all of these guys that Hard Knocks spent a pretty significant amount of time with, none of them made the team. And I think that made this section of the show just kind of a bummer. Like, you have all of these, you have the empty locker room, you have all of these reactions. You see Luke Wilson, and it's weird to see a guy who's so ebullient and full of life and excitable and funny and friendly. It's weird to see him so down when he's out in the parking lot and he's trying to put on a brave face for what eventually amounts to his exit interview with Hard Knocks.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit it on the head. I don't know what to add to that, honestly, because he was a great guy. We wished he stuck around longer because, for our own selfish content reasons, he would have been fun to have. But I don't know. You're seeing these guys at their most vulnerable state, and I can't imagine being in their shoes. You know, their whole livelihood is on the line.
What did you think of the idea to not have cameras inside GM Mike Mayock's office for some of those exit interviews? You really only saw the last conversation between a coach and player with Cabinda and Coach Gunther. What did you think of that?
Yeah, that was strange to me because we saw the exit interview between Cabinda and Gunther, and it was obviously a depressing kind of talk, but also uplifting to hear Gunther say, hey, I'll give you an A++ recommendation, whatever you need. But I would have rather heard from Mike Mayock. But I don't know if that was by design, whether Mike Mayock at the beginning of the show was like, look, I don't want that to be seen. I don't want people to see these guys or me delivering some really harsh news.
You'd have to think that that's the case, right? I kind of would go the other way with it personally. We've kind of touched on this in the past. I have a very low tolerance for that kind of, not awkwardness, but that really open emotional vulnerability.
It feels corny to you, doesn't it?
I just don't know if I would have wanted to see Mayock sit down and tell some of these people that their football dream was over. For me, that feels intrusive for me to see.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it's too much to this is a very personal, private moment that I don't – it almost feels like voyeuristic.
Yeah, I imagine it's pretty hard for Hard Knocks to try and ride that line, though, right? Because the entire show is meant to be intrusive.
Right.
And show – peel back a layer on their personal lives. But I agree that there's some things that need to be kept sacred, and I don't need to – I don't need to bum myself out seeing somebody else down on getting kicked, you know?
So let's not bum each other out. I have a fun little
you do have a game.
Update here. It's not a game.
Oh, okay.
It's not a game. It's just a little bit of an update. I looked into where four of the key Hard Knocks characters, if you will, that were cut, where they are now. Because a lot has happened. Rosters all over the country have been shaken up. Some of these players have found new homes. So as we saw on the show, Jason Kabinda landed on Detroit's practice squad,
yep,
where he remains as we record this. Luke Wilson worked out with the New Orleans Saints. Don't know if he has signed yet or not. Keelan Doss is on Jacksonville's practice squad. He chose the Jaguars practice squad over the Raiders squad. And I know that a lot of fans had issue with that, but the opportunity was simply better there for him.
Yeah, I agree with you. How are you going to fight your way to the top if you have Antonio Brown and Tyrell Williams in your way?
Right.
It's going to be damn near impossible to achieve.
Absolutely.
So you go to Jacksonville, where your best competition, no disrespect to those guys, but you got D.D. Westbrook, Marquise Lee. There's more opportunity, obviously, so I don't fault him for that. And unfortunately, you can't drop back-to-back passes in your preseason finale.
Yeah.
You can't do it. So I appreciate that update. I knew about Doss and I knew about Kabinda. I did not know about Luke Wilson. Who's the fourth?
Brandon Marshall,
okay,
who recently worked out for the Houston Texans. They kicked the tires on him. So hopefully everything goes well for those four guys. And at the very least, hopefully, if they catch on with those other teams, it'll be cool to see them on game day if we ever play them again.
Yeah, I can't imagine how quickly Kabinda had to pack his things because, as he tells his mom, I got to get on a flight. I'm sorry, I can't talk anymore. How does everybody's stuff get transported?
The logistics of it are kind of crazy, right? Like,
yeah,
so much goes on behind the scenes to help turn over the locker room to, you know, they showed the scraping the names off the nameplates, the packing up of the duffel bag. Like, there's a lot going on behind the scenes.
How do you – yeah, I mean, who ends your lease? Who gets your stuff out of there for you? If he's got to get on a flight that day and he goes straight to Detroit, he's got to learn a whole new playbook. He's going to be – immersed in their culture, right, and trying to get up to date on everything. He's not going to have time to fly back, pack all his bags. I don't know how you do that.
Hopefully Tier Whitehead gave him a few good recommendations for some restaurants, some food spots in Detroit.
Yeah, that's right, the former Lion. The former Lion. That was the last point I have to make about the cuts was when Keelan Doss goes in, right? I couldn't help but feel even more emotional about it because the song that plays is the Autumn Wind, but is just a solo trumpet that feels like you're watching the aftermath of D-Day. It's just a pan over all the dead bodies and all of the loss, and it's just the solo trumpet playing in the background. It's like, wow, this is really – I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. Saving Private Ryan, like, that movie's the only movie that's ever made me cry. It's that kind of stuff, man. Fun fact.
But you've told me in the past that it – you didn't really cry, right? It was just a single manly
tear
that rolled
tear.
Down your
a
cheek.
A single tear. It's at the very end of the movie when he salutes the grave. That gets me. And Keelan Doss almost got me with that trumpet.
Oh, man. Emotional moment.
Yes, definitely. And Wax, finally, the last part of the episode, we got to hang out with owner Mark Davis a little bit and take us in Al Davis's former office.
And it's pretty cool that it hasn't been changed at all since he was there. I remember when John Gruden was hired, the night he landed in Oakland, he took a tour of the facility to see what had changed since his first stint here. And there's footage of it somewhere. I'm not sure it ever saw the light of day, but Coach Gruden toured Mr. Davis's old office on that thick white plush carpet and strolled around. There's a huge wooden desk in there and all sorts of books about Brooklyn baseball and Syracuse and all sorts of cool, like, little reminders and memories of the past. It's like half a museum and half a time capsule.
Yeah, it's still got all the Raiders history and trapped in one room, right?
Exactly.
You walk in there and you know everything you need to know about the Raiders.
You saw what Mr. Davis had on his whiteboard. He had John Kondo's name. He had, you know, Seymour, Randy Moss. It's so cool to see that era of Raiders history, one that probably, in terms of wins and losses, fans don't want to remember, But that's the era that's preserved forever on the whiteboard.
Absolutely. All right, let's get into our B block, as you'd call
Absolutely,
it.
Absolutely, yes.
Our behind the curtain. This week we talk a little bit about Nathan Peterman and the elbow injury he sustained during the final preseason tune-up.
Yes, and I'd like to preface this by saying that there was so much hysteria over the weekend on Raiders Twitter after we claimed DeShone Kizer from the Packers, because we technically had four quarterbacks on the roster, and everyone lost their minds. What's Gruden doing? How is this possible? We don't have enough defensive ends. Why do we have so many quarterbacks on the roster? And a lot of it just came back to nobody really knew the extent of Nathan Peterman's injury that he suffered in this game. So you saw him take a pretty significant shot from a Seahawks lineman and actually tore ligaments in his elbow and is now on IR.
The only thing I can think of to describe his performance was that he was a Gruden grinder.
It was so cool to see him fight through the pain on the sidelines to throw with Coach Olsen and get back out there.
I heard a little bit of Derek in his voice, too, because Derek never cusses.
I was going to bring this up, actually. Yeah.
He's sitting on the bench. He's like, frick, darn it. This hurts. Yeah. Rats. It's exactly what Derek would do.
I have him down for one frick, a shoot, a dang, and a holy cow.
C-block walks.
Two-minute warning, where we cover let's just wrap up everything. Put a big bow on this whole season here. I'm going to kick it right to you. Who's your Hard Knocks overall MVP?
I think it's got to be John Gruden.
Has to be, right?
The only option, not the only option, but the best option.
The best option.
All of his knock if you're with me's. By the way, if you were to make a drinking game out of this season of Hard Knocks and you had to drink every time you heard knock if you're with me, am I clear on that? Or just, I don't know, something.
You wouldn't make it through that remix they made.
No,
you'd
be on the floor. Yeah, you'd be incapacitated. It's game over. Put a bow on it, call it a night. But he's my MVP.
I got to agree with you. I mean, this episode especially, he had a great moment where he had a shout-out to Bill Gates when he was trying to get all the technology working on the sidelines. He had a Rocky III reference when he called Max Crosby Clubber Lang. And at the very end, you saw a flashback to 2008. He called his shot. He told the referees, "No, I'm going to be on HBO so I can start dropping F-bombs."
Here we are, 11 years later.
Just an incredible moment to cap off the whole series.
Yeah, really coming full circle.
He's a showman.
Yeah, and I can't wait to hear more mic'd up clips from Mr. Grudog later this season. I'm sure there'll be plenty.
Absolutely, and if you had to give a silver medal out, you might even give it to this guy, our next guest. He is the defensive line coach for the Oakland Raiders. I have your CV here in front of me. You were a 12-year NFL vet.
Yes.
Your 19th year in the league.
Yes.
You played in the Super Bowl.
Twice.
You are the defensive line coach of the Oakland Raiders. Coach Brenson Buckner is with us. Thank you for stopping by.
Appreciate you for having me.
Absolutely. So the first question I think that everyone wants to know is, did you watch Hard Knocks?
No, I lived it. No, I watched some of the clips because, of course, for friends and family, it's big when they see you on there. But I didn't watch it all the way through. That's one of the shows I watch during the off season when football is not around and I don't want to watch baseball and I refuse to watch golf and tennis. So Hard Knocks, just put Hard Knocks on. I just watch season after season after season. So that's when I pick it up.
Do you think it'll be weird for you to rewatch what's happened, 8 months prior? Like you can relive it for years to come?
Oh, it is kind of weird to do that because then you get to see how crazy you act or what you were saying. And it's nice to actually see yourself in actual reality and not like I was doing a movie. I'm like, damn, is that how I sound when I'm coaching? That's the face I make when I'm mad at somebody. So, no, it is a good little teaching tool.
I did appreciate, because there's one clip, I don't know if you saw it, it was from last week's episode where you're telling your defensive line group that, pretty blunt, you're like, some of y'all football sucks. And you're keeping it 100% real with them. And I appreciated that because I always like tough love. You know, I mean, you're saying it because it's coming from a place of you want the best for them, right?
Yes, it's coming from the heart. You know, a lot of times, you make it to the NFL and you get caught in this this dream, or you living a dream, but those dreams come to an end. Like Coach Gruden had mentioned, you know, they turn to nightmares when you get that knock on the door. And my whole thing is just wanting guys to use the opportunity to make it happen, to live for the moment, because your moment might end. The farthest you may go in the NFL is preseason camp, and you don't never want to regret not giving it your all. So sometimes guys get caught up, I'm here, I'm part of the numbers. You know, they have a draft every year for a reason.
Right, right.
You know, they have free agency every reason. So it comes from a spot, because I've been cut before.
Yeah.
And that's the feeling that your heart drop. You're like, for a minute, you think life is over right. with. So, you know, I like to share those experiences. You know, people call it tough love. I just call it just being real.
Well, I appreciate it. I was telling Matt last week when we saw the clip and we talked about it a little bit that nobody in this generation wants tough love anymore. They want to be encouraged all the time, which is great. You deserve to be encouraged, and it should be the first thing, right? But sometimes you need a little bit of criticism to give you that extra kick in the butt, and I feel like that's going away nowadays. So I appreciate that you keep it.
But that doesn't stop you from being, like, a compassionate leader. Like, you take time with all your guys. You know, I think one of the things that you see on this show is, especially pregame, you have a little moment, however short it may be, with each of your guys one-on-one where you're letting them know you're here for a reason, it's time to work. Where did that come from? Like, who was the coach that helped influence that side of you, or have you always been like that?
Well, I've always been like that because, you know, I started off coaching Little League football.
Yeah.
And so I'm 7 to 9 year old, so I'm getting guys, kids that don't even want to get out of the car. You know, they crying, kicking and screaming. But the one thing I used to always say, if I can make that kid do something he couldn't do yesterday, how much is that going to help him in life? And so when I look at my players, it's the same way. I'm going to be hard on you because I'm giving you the answers to the test. This is not science. I want you to succeed. My job every year when I set out, I pray to God that everybody that sits in my room has a job after the end of the preseason. It don't have to be with me as your coach, but somewhere else, because I hope I imparted in you that much. So I always go out there tough love, but then Bear Bryant used to say, coach them hard, but hug them later.
Sure.
Because you got to let them know you care. Mm-hmm. And I care about all the guys, more so off the field than on the field. But I love them so much the way they are, but I love them too much to let them stay that way. Because staying the same is a form of quitting to me. So I'm always going to push you to get better and better. Because in life, don't nobody push you in life when it's time to pay rent or pay mm-hmm. your mortgage or the light bill is due.
Right.
You got to get out your bed to go to AT&T to go to work. You know, it's not a coach just on your head. If you don't get your job done, they get rid of you.
Right.
So football mirrors life. And if a guy comes to me and the only thing he becomes is a better football player, I failed in life and helping them reach their goals.
Right. So we're talking a lot about cuts on this episode, and it's rare with the workforce and the churn in the NFL. It's rare to see players that are able to walk away on their own terms. And this episode starts with you sort of reflecting on the Andrew Luck news. Mm-hmm. I know you tweeted about it as well. What was your reaction when you heard that he was walking away?
Really, I respect the guy, because in today's age, you can see, first thing everybody said, oh, he's walking away from all that money. He quit on his team. That just shows you how much respect he has for the game. He could have fleeced the coach for more money because they would have held on to him because he's a great quarterback.
Right.
But people don't realize when you're hurt and you're going through rehab, yeah, you're getting treatment, but it's the mental aspect that you don't see. Learning how to walk again. You know, I'm a guy that had my right knee scoped 6 times, my left knee scoped 4 times, elbow scoped once. You have to learn how to walk and function all over again. And so when Andrew Luck did it, and the reason he did it, I respect him more than anybody. And people say, well, he quit on this team. He didn't quit on this team. He respected his life he had with his wife and his kids and the quality of life he needed after that. And that outweighs football. I don't care who you are.
Right.
If it, religion, family, then football. A lot of people get blurred on that family part because they get caught up in the money. But I respect the guy.
In that same regard, you also talked a little bit about being a veteran and getting cut. And it stings, right?
Yes.
And that was all I could think about because they tie that in with Brandon Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine the reality that you face being at that point in your career where you're Super Bowl champion, you've proven that you can play in this league for a long time, and now you're dealing with injuries, and it's a tough reality where you're being told, I don't know if you can do it anymore. No. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And it happened to me. I was a young player when it happened. You know, I was vested, but it happened. You know, Marty Schottenheimer, I get traded to Kansas City from the Steelers because I was a knucklehead. Let's be honest. I was a knucklehead. You know, it was going to my head, you know, having some success. And Marty Schottenheimer sat me down and looked me in my eyes and said, I don't think you're good enough to help my team win. And that's a blow. The year, 2 years before, I was just starting in Super Bowl 30. I played as Steelers. Right. We came in and beat Kansas City. Now you're telling me I'm not good enough. That hurts because now you just started to look. And at that moment, my whole NFL career flashed before my eyes. Where did I go wrong? Oh, you're not respecting the game the way it's supposed to be. Now, Brandon Marshall is a little bit different. That's my story.
Right.
But as a vet, when you're told to something, because you're the best of the world, you're the 0.01% of the world, and it's not a bigger lead than the NFL. You get cut, and you start to, like, think life is over with. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But you bounce back. If you're strong and you trust yourself, you bounce back. But that shows you're human. That shows that this game is another side of this game other than the lights and the cameras as a player. It's coming to an end. And so a lot of times when I coach now, I like to coach guys from that other side that it's an end coming. Either going to catch you from behind or you're going to run to it. And so I try to like get that. Guys to run to it because you run to it, it's going to embrace you.
Right.
Like Andrew Luck, he ran to the end. Now, if it catch you from behind because you can't put down the drugs, the alcohol, you can't stop partying, or you don't take it serious, those are the ones guys that get hunted the rest of their life.
You also have another line in there, 100% retirement rate.
Yes.
Doesn't matter. Everyone's time comes eventually. Father time's undefeated. I think one thing that has stood out a lot in this season has been your turns of phrases, your way with words, the way you express things in a very, very real way. And I'm wondering how much say you and Coach Smith had, because you and Frank Smith got a lot of screen time on Hard Knocks because those cameras were in your position room mm-hmm. through camp. How much say did you guys have in that? Was that something you guys embraced? Was it kind of like, well, we're giving it to you guys, so you guys got to kind of deal with it? Because I know it can be tough to be real and honest with your players mm-hmm. knowing that there are cameras rolling.
Well, they came in and asked. You know, I don't have a problem with it because I don't put on a fake persona.
You're the same guy.
You're going to get what you get. Broken English, words might not sound right. You're going to get it. I honestly feel you can't have true reality without being truly real. So I embrace
it. That's another good one.
You know, I embrace it because I'm going to be who I'm going to be with no cameras or any camera. You walk in there, you ask any player, you know, was Coach putting on for the cameras? It's like, no. You know, it's the same every day. And I think that's what the guys respect. So, you know, I embrace it. You know, I've done it before on the All or Nothing. You know,
oh,
when
that's
we
right.
Arizona.
Yeah. Sure.
And then some of the people saying carryover, and they was like, you know, you did it before. Do you mind? No, I don't mind. I really like people to see what goes on in there. I have a son that has a dream of playing NFL football. He just think daddy goes there and draws up plays and he's buddy-buddy with all these guys. No, sometimes I have to cross the line and risk them not liking me to get them to do their job so they can respect me at the end.
Were you able to tell, like you said, you know, Coach Buck, was he putting on for the cameras? And you obviously weren't, but were you able to tell whether or not a player was putting on for the cameras if they were around your position group?
Oh, yeah, you can tell. You can tell the guys that come in, they're a little bit more vocal today. Or, oh, Coach Buck, can I ask you about this? You hadn't asked me a question in OTAs, in mini camp, phase one or phase two. You can tell guys, because a lot of guys get caught up in, you know, they want to be on that camera. But for the most part, you know, I always try to tell my guys, just keep it 100. You know, we keep it 100. If you say some irrelevance and it makes sense, they're going to put you on there. You don't have to go out there and act.
So what made this group so special? I know when cuts come, every position group has to cut players that it's not necessarily a question of talent or want or drive. It's just a numbers game. It's just a business. What made the group that you had through camp and up into cuts so special, so unique for you this year?
They were great students. A lot of times we want to give credit to the teachers for being great teachers, but I think you got to have exceptional students that are going to allow you to coach them and to teach them. And this group allowed me to be who I am to get the job done. And the one thing that we challenged everybody in that room, me and Coach Smith, before we got to training camp is make it hard for everybody here to get a job. So when we decide who we're going to keep, you can walk up with your head high because you know that team is going to be ready because you gave it your all. And each one of those guys, you know, did it. Every day they came to work, they challenged one another. Cause that's why you can see some guys on days were having great days, some guys weren't. Nobody got comfortable. Mm-hmm. And we try to make them get comfortable being uncomfortable because that's when you become your best because every day is a chance. That's what made them special. They came to work every day, no matter if I had Hank Preston with the third team and Gabe Wright going with the ones.
Right.
Hank never got his head down. He's just like, let me grind a little bit more. So everybody got a chance, you know, to wear the crown, but we just knew at the end you wouldn't be able to keep but so many. But that group is going to be sharpened and ready because that's how we prepared ourselves.
Obviously, you have a presence on Twitter. I don't know how actively you're using Twitter, but
at Faith Before Fame for everyone out there. And I think we got to get you verified, right?
Yeah, get me verified.
Yeah, I'll get you verified. And yeah, we'll take care of that for you.
The reason I really got on Twitter was because, you know, you got a teenage son.
Yeah,
I was like, I got to follow him. You know, I don't trust the world. I trust my son. I don't trust the world. But so I started doing. But it was a way. It was a way also, like I said, I don't see myself as a coach. I see myself as a teacher of life that just happened to be a part of football. So a lot of things, I do a lot of coaching clinics. Or, you know, I got kids that I coach in youth football now that's going off to college, and they wanted a way to keep stay in touch, mm-hmm. touch with me. And my message has always been faith before fame in anything. You got to have faith in your defensive philosophy before you ever get the fame on the game. So, you know, I'm pretty active on there because I know I got kids that I've coached and grown men now that I've coached that always look to see what Coach Buck is doing.
Have you noticed, because as Matt pointed out, the show has really highlighted your personality and your quips, mm-hmm. and just some of your catchphrases and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed any members or like people from Raider Nation reach out to you at all? Because this is really your proper introduction to them. They've obviously seen you through the Senior Bowl and through the off season, but they're seeing a lot more of you than they probably would ever see.
Yeah, Raider Nation has really reached out, you know, and it's great because when 1989, dating myself, you know, as a senior, we all wrote, "Where will we be 20 years down the road?" And my thing said, "Work playing for the Raiders."
Married with two kids.
And playing for the Oakland Raiders. It was 10 years down the road from 89. Sure. Which just so happened I was across the bay. You know what I mean? But I always grew up a Raiders fan.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? So Raiders fans have been great. They have embraced me. I always loved the Raiders fans. The passion what they play. You know, my best friend was a first-round draft choice here. My best friend in coaching was a first-round draft choice here. My college roommate was a third-round draft choice here. So I've always been undercover Raider fan, but now I get a part of the Nation. They introduce themselves, you know, because they're very opinionated. I know right now we cannot have 13 sacks because all the tweets I get are about we don't want 13 sacks no more, and I'm working hard as I can to make sure we don't. And the players are working hard, but I can feel their energy. I can feel the excitement and Raider Nation, man. It is me. Some of them ask me, is this really Coach Buckner? It is me. I don't have a ghost account. And, you know, I do it for fun. I do it for my people. I'm not going to get into any squabbles. You know, if you cuss me out too much after a game, I probably block you. But other than that, you know, I have fun with it.
That's a good that's the healthy mentality to have, right?
Absolutely. We'll see if we can get you, A, that follower bump from all these listeners, and B, we'll talk later. We'll get you verified.
Oh, most definitely. All right. Appreciate it.
Before we get you out of here, I have one more question for you. Is it true that you own 300-plus throwback jerseys?
Yes. I was
That's insane.
When that came out, it was almost addictive. I needed a vice.
Sure.
And throwback jerseys, I grew up like old school, you know, because I was too big to play Little League football and stuff like that. So my dad made me a fan of the game. So I grew up, we watched everything. We talked about Otis Sistrunk.
Sure, was a great, absolutely.
You know, my godfather, you know, come in, you know, talk about it. So I start, when throwback jerseys came along, I started saying, oh, Jim Brown All-Star jersey. And it just, my wife said I had a problem. You know, I got Johnny Unitas then. It was just, I just started collecting them left and right. You know, I wore a couple of them, but it's like, oh, these things, I can get them signed. And these are, and then the number just grew.
What's your most prized, like, top three?
My top three, Johnny Unitas. I was playing for the Carolina Panthers, and Mr. Richardson played with Johnny Unitas. I got it, and he got it signed for me. I think about a month before Johnny Unitas passed.
That's incredible.
So I got that. I got a Jim Brown College All-Star jersey. Back when I think the College All-Stars used to play the NFL All-Stars. Yeah. And it was a blue and white 32. And I got it's funny, a lot of people didn't know Tony Dorsett played for the Denver Broncos. So I got a Tony Dorsett Denver Broncos one. And I don't want people to hate me, but I did get it. I did buy O.J. Simpson, you know, Jerry. But that's the juice,
right?
You know what I mean?
Bills, Niners,
Bills. Couldn't find a Niner one because that was been great. Yeah. I couldn't find
any good Raider gems in your throwback
selection? Oh yes, without a doubt. I got Howie Long's. Okay. I got Ken Stabler. I got the Assassins.
Okay.
I got his. Who else did I get? And I think I got the Mad Store. Wow. I got to go back and look.
That's pretty cool, man. Well, I want to thank you for swinging by and talking a little shop with us. This is our last episode of Harder Knocks because it's following the last episode of Hard Knocks. So what a ride it's been, and it's been a pleasure to enjoy this last episode with you. So thank you. Great luck this season. Mm-hmm. You're going to put 13 sacks way in that rear view.
Yeah, definitely going to put it in the rear view. That's what we're fighting for. But I appreciate everything. Thank you for having me.
What an interview with Coach Buckner Walks. Very insightful man. He's got a lot of interesting things that people probably didn't know. The jersey collection is one thing. That's some good digging and research on your behalf.
Thank you.
But what a good guy. I'm happy that he was one of the standouts this season. I'm happy the Raider Nation got to learn a little bit more about their new defensive line coach.
I'm happy he's on the coaching staff.
Same. I think we're going to see more than 13 sacks this year.
Absolutely.
And just an all-around great guy. So we appreciate him stopping by. And Raider Nation, we appreciate you riding with us for all five episodes of Harder Knocks and Hard Knocks. It was quite the experience, and I wouldn't have wanted to do it with anybody else but you and T-Bone, our great producer, who's bent over backwards trying to make us sound great.
Thank you very much, Travis. I can't believe it. This is a series wrap on Harder Knocks, training camp with Hard Knocks, training camp with the Oakland Raiders.
Unfortunately.
Is that the last time I'm going to get to say that full name?
Can we get our thumbnail framed and put somewhere in the facility? I feel like it deserves that.
Absolutely.
Thank you again, Raider Nation, and we hope to see you week one against the Denver Broncos, which should be a good one on Monday Night Football.